Hey guys, it is round six has just left us, and I'm joined again by my usual partner in crime, Richard. How are you going?
I'm doing really well, David. Thank you. And yourself?
Not too bad. We're turning this into almost a regular thing. It's almost like we're our own regular podcast with two people on it.
It's turning out that way. If any really, other judges want to join in, please do.
Yeah, we want you guys to join in. But, you know, if you don't want to, then that's fine. We'll continue to have a good time on a Tuesday evening. And, yeah, I don't know. I like talking to you, Richard. It's great. If it's just you and me for the rest of the season, there's no problem. So,
fantastic.
Let's go through the games from last week. I didn't, as we remember last week, if anyone listening along at home, I had a bit of a laptop malfunction, and we had to do all the stuff, which also meant that because the HyperM's spreadsheet is on my laptop, it took me some sizable time to get two rounds worth in, but I got them in. So everything's up to date. So I think if you're looking on Twitter, you would have seen that the team of the year and the the HyperM's top 15 were up there. I love how I originally meant to do top 10 and put 15, and now it's just 15 because that's the way I've set it up. So okay, so we should go through the games from last week. So we had the Knights against the Roosters, an interesting game because I don't think people gave the Roosters much of a chance, but they were much better than, well, they got the job done anyway, but they were probably a little bit better than people thought. And there's something about the Knights this year at home. They're not good at home, and this is really weird for a Newcastle team. Obviously, being a Roosters fan, what did you think of the game?
Well, it was a very, very strange game. And I thought that the first 10 or 15 minutes, Knights were in control, looked like they were just going to run away with it. And then from about 10 to 15 minutes in till about the last 10 minutes, it was all the Roosters. Mm. They dominated almost every facet, but they just didn't get enough points on the board. And then that gave the Knights the opportunity to come back at the end. And the Knights, in that last 2 minutes, when they got that try back, they really should have won it. They had lots of opportunities. They should never have been in a position to be even with a chance of winning it, but they should have won it. And it was just one of those really weird kind of games.
So I watched a bit of it, but I only really saw the end, that last sort of 10 minutes, and I was absolutely shocked that the Roosters were in front. But then, especially with the way the game was going, because the Newcastle looked like they were back in charge again at that point. And I know that it's the 70-something minute, and a lot of guys are tired, but when Kalyn Ponga makes a clean line break and no one follows him up, I mean, to his credit, he tried to stand the fullback up himself, and he did a pretty good job of it, but like there was just no support. And then Adam Elliott almost goes over and turns to pass, and they're all got their backs turned. So, I mean, if I was a Knights fan, I'd be very upset with that.
I would be too, absolutely, 100%. I think you're spot on. I just think Newcastle were absolutely gassed. And I think when Palmer had spent so much of that game injured, and he was a passenger for about half an hour, and the others was doing so much defending for him and covering up, and he just, I'm not sure that anyone expected him to make that run, because he'd just been like, he looked like he couldn't even stand at certain points, and for him to suddenly break off and run like that, I just think it caught them out by surprise, and they were absolutely gassed. So there's a little bit of forgiveness there, but yeah. If you're a fan, you're sitting there at home, you're thinking, why is no one going with him?
I couldn't figure it out. I mean, I didn't watch the whole game, so I didn't know about all that other stuff. But
look at the meters. The meters gained. The Roosters, between them, gained over 2,000 meters, and so did the Knights running with the ball. Like, you look at there was one, Joey Marley went 300, over 300 metres, and then two other Roosters went over 200 metres, and three others went over 180. I mean, it was like huge, huge numbers. They were just end-to-end stuff and lots of running, and I think there was just two very, very tired teams.
Yeah, so with the HyperM's, remember we were talking a few rounds back about putting together the stats to try and work out the quality of the game, basically, or the intensity of the game.
Yes.
So I came on to another method, because I thought to myself, I was doing it by ranking them by round, but then I realized, but what if one round has a bunch of stinker games then a game that's not really worth it's going to get a much higher ranking than something in the next round where they might be all quality games. So yes. What I've done now is obviously in the high premiums is going to make a slight difference. So when we get a points for someone, you know, someone's on 13 point whatever points, their points may actually go down or up depending on what the quality of the other games happen for the rest of the year. So what I've done is I've used those same kind of sections. So I've used the time and possession, I've used the tackle break and line breaks as like an aggregate kind of thing. I've used the effective tackle percentages, and I've used the like average gain per set. And so each one of those, I've then worked out, or I've got it working out the average for every game for those things, and I've got it working out a standard deviation up and down. And depending on where that game falls in terms of all those standard deviations, it gets like a slight increase or decrease, and then it averages it out across the five categories. So what I've done as well, just so I can get a general idea of how good a game everything is, I've then put all of them in their ranks. So there's like 40-something games that have happened so far, 45, 48, something like that. I think it's 48. Yeah. And that game, the Newcastle Roosters game, is in the top five. So it's one of, because there's so many meters gained, there's a lot of line breaks, the effective tackles were quite good. So it's actually quite a good game. Like unfortunately, it's on the laptop. I just turned the laptop off. But it is up in that top sort of thing. There's a few other games. I think there was the Knights Warriors game from maybe a week or two ago. That one's up in the top five as well. That was
very high quality as well.
Yeah, so it's all about high quality and high completion rates and things like that. So games that have got high completion rates, lots of meters gained, but line breaks and efficient tackles, are gonna rank higher than ones that are like, you know, both teams complete at 60% or something. You know, they're gonna be not as good. So I just wanted to mention that because I thought I've been working on that in the background. It's sort of, it doesn't make a huge difference to everyone's points. It's like maybe a 10% difference either way, but it's just very telling because that game, when you mentioned how many meters they gained, I realized that's one of the reasons why it was ranked so highly, because it really did, you know. Must have been a real end-to-end sort of game.
It was, and it was highly entertaining, and it was nail-biting, and I can't believe the Roosters actually managed to win possession, 51-49. That's a real rarity.
So we should do the 3-2-1s. So for Newcastle, it was Leo Thompson with a 3, Kai Pearce-Paul with a 2, and Callum Ponga with a 1. And for the Roosters, it was Joey Manu with a 3, Victor Adley with a 2, and Terrell May with a 1. That Kai Pearce-Paul can play football.
He can, can't he? I mentioned him last week, and I've mentioned him a few times. He is a very talented player. I like him a lot.
He's very, very good. And I play a NRL Fantasy with some guys at work, and I had Terrell May, and then I saw, was it last week or the week before, when JJWH came back and his minutes went down, I thought, I better drop him. So I dropped him. One of the other guys who I'm playing this week picked him up and went, I'm sorry, I picked him up. And then I thought, oh, that's okay, because he's not going to do much. I said that to him and he goes, oh no, that was just 1 week and he had like a sin bin or something and that's why his points were down. And I'm like, fuck, I should have looked into it a bit more. So apparently, he scored really well in fantasy. So
he had a monster game. He was very good. I do want to wrap Leo Thompson with him. It wasn't so much bullocking runs and smashing out the middle that was so impressive with him. It was getting back and being that last line defender, getting back and tidying up, doing cover tackles out on the wing, all sorts of things that you would not expect a prop forward to be doing, he was doing. And that was just special. So just a brilliant performance from him. You did not expect him to be where any popping up all over the place. So really good performance from him.
No. Look, I didn't see the game, but I think, did you sort of say you thought this was pretty spot on?
Yes, 3-2-1s? Absolutely. I scored it myself. I had Thompson, Kai Pearce-Paul and Ponga as 3-2-1s, so the same. I had Manu, and then I had Crichton / Radley. So is number 2 and Tyrrell May as 1. So I couldn't pick Crichton and Radley. I just couldn't pick between them. And they were both excellent. And it was Crichton's best game since last year. He was fantastic.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Let's move on to the next one. So I think it was really interesting, the next one. So it's the Storm against the Bulldogs, that a few of the guys were sort of, a few of the guys I talked to were kind of going, oh, you know, we don't get, not giving Bulldogs much of a chance, but they've beaten Melbourne before. And they did that. Did they do it last year? I think, but, you know, like I really thought that this Melbourne would really blow them away, but in the end it was a tight, really tight game, and they only just got away with it, Melbourne. So maybe we'll do the 3-2-1s first and we can chat about the game. But it was 3 for Munster, 2 for Sean Bloor, 1 for Pappenhausen. That Sean Bloor might be a bit of the, he scored the try. And then it was 3 for Kikau, 2 for Josh Adokar for all the points, basically. And Bronson Sherry gets the one. Did you watch this one?
Yes, I did. I did. I watched every game.
Well, there you go. Perfect.
Apart from the Souths game. I only watched the mini on that one, but every other game I watched in full.
Hmm.
This was, again, another... This was a game that was... there was some amazing people doing all sorts of things all over the field, and then there was just stupid errors. And the Bulldogs, when they remembered to give the ball to Kikau and go down the left-hand side... They just gave the Storm so many problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the Storm just didn't know what to do. And they were a bit all over the place in defence. So while you had these players do it, like, I think Josh Adokar, I had like 9 ticks next to him and like positive things he did. But also had 4 errors against him. But it still didn't make any difference. He would be in the votes for sure. Kikau was amazing. And yeah, it was just one of those games where Warbrick had an absolute... They gave him a bath at times, but then in the second half he came good and got involved. And it was just, yeah, it was a strange game. But when the Bulldogs went left, they really looked dangerous and they just kept going away from it. And that gave the Storm just enough opportunity to nick it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Dogs actually should have gotten this one. They were a little bit unlucky. If they can stick to a proper game plan, they try to do... strange things at times, but they were just unlucky. Haywood on debut was very good. I'll just give him a rap.
Yeah. All right. All right. I got nothing else to say for that one, so we should probably move on.
I will say that the Storm did miss Kamikamita. Yeah, he went off early with an injury, and that sort of messed up their rotation in their middle. So that was a lot of why the Dogs got a lot of opportunity in the forwards, and then, you know, made that really changed things a bit around.
I just realized we didn't do turning points, which is the whole point of what we're supposed to be doing here.
Yeah.
I haven't got the stuff in front of me. Actually, I can pull up Twitter.
I have for that one. I had the Dogs' inability to convert tries and inability to convert line breaks into tries. That was my turning point for that game.
No, fair enough. So yeah, I don't know what for the Knights.
There was. You just missed it.
Did I? Oh, you can see what I can see.
Yeah.
He's getting back to his best. So it's going to be different. Yeah. No, that's cool. I know. I was trying to find. I don't know if you can see my screen. I was trying to find this one. The Roosters. The Roosters. Oh, that's right. It got done way at the end. Yeah, he didn't give us a turning point. That's okay. I mean, look, the turning point could have been anything for the Roosters Knights. I feel like the turning point, the very, very ultimate turning point that cost the Knights the game was the fact that Ponga had a clean line break and no one followed him up. I think that was what it was. But because all it had to be was the winger following him up and he draws and passes and they score and they win the game. But we should go back. Let's just jump on to the Broncos against the Dolphins. So it seemed like the Dolphins put up a bit of a struggle for a while, but they really weren't any match for the Broncos, as far as I can tell.
The Dolphins were clearly the second-class team here. The Broncos just have enough players all over the park, and I think the Dolphins were missing Flegler, missing... Farnworth, and Hammer went off with an injury.
Yeah, 20 minutes
and they
in.
Just,
yeah.
Yeah, so they're missing so many of their real key players. Kaufusi's out. I think Nkuruma had an issue. He got run over, and Flegler was out, and Farnworth was out, and they're just missing so many of their top line players. Gilbert's obviously gone for the season. They're struggling. They're short on numbers, and they're just in issues. And actually, I sort of said 17 errors to Tessie New last week. But he actually had quite. He played quite well. Averillo played quite well, but they were just outclassed. Mam and Cobbo and Walsh and Carrigan and Willison just ran the show.
Fair enough. All right, so the 3-2-1s. Patrick Carrigan got the 3 for the Broncos. It was Ricky with the 2 and Cobbo with the 1. For the Dolphins, it was Aitken with the 3, Nkuruma with the 2, and the Mark Nichols with the 1. So Mark Nichols got a start, which was good for him. But I suppose not good for the Dolphins, because they were kind of forced into it. They had nothing left, basically.
Yeah, I think Averillo was unlucky not to get a point. Stone had some good stuff early and then got tired. I think Nichols suffered from the same issue. They were just getting tired. Hoopener came on as a debut, did some good things, did some not. Wallace did his usual little, one or two good things coming off the bench. I would not have given a point to Jordan Rickey. I thought that was a bit of a surprise. But when I looked up his numbers, he actually had quite good numbers. So I think stats, he amassed some stats there without actually doing much. That I would have given Cobbo or Willison a vote.
Fair enough. So that was T Mac did this one. His turning point, he said it could have been the hammer injury, or the injury to Hamiso, but he said he went with for the dra the Dolphins Dragons. The Dolphins drop off in their own kick. Broncos get the loose ball and Walsh runs 80 to score. Next set they drop it again and the Broncos score again. So yeah, that little passage there with the Broncos, because it, like I said, it was tight. I mean, it wasn't tight, but they hadn't really pulled away until that kind of happened. But yeah, look, I think everyone knew that, unless something special came from the Dolphins, they weren't going to win that game. So.
Yeah, it was repeated errors and letting in scores. I absolutely agree with T-Mac on that. The turning point was spot on.
Yeah, okay, perfect. Okay, let's move on to the game that was a crazy, crazy game. That was on the Saturday early one. So it was the Warriors against the Seagulls. I was cheering the Warriors on very loudly. It was a strange game because the Seagulls got out to a decent lead and sort of kept it. They were at like 22-14 for a while there. And then, I mean, we can talk about a turning point, but basically all we got to do is mention Josh Alloa and we kind of know what that is. It was, I did, I actually, because I was watching, like, I was at the actual Para home game, so I was watching the sort of stuff, and I looked down and I was just checking the score, and all of a sudden it went from 22-14 and it was 22 all, and it happened like all in one go, and I was like, oh, so they must have. I couldn't figure out how it happened, and so I was asking him online. I'm like, was it an 8-point try or something? And they're like, no, it was a try. And then Josh Alloa did one of the most stupid things I've ever seen on a football field. So, if you guys didn't see it, just I reckon if you watch the, I reckon it'll be on the mini anyway, if you want to see it.
So he's been suspended for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and well deserved as well.
And then no one could
We.
kick it. I was watching because I thought, now I'll go at the KO, I'll watch it the extra time while I'm waiting for Parramatta game to start. And no one wanted to kick a field goal at all in this game. Like, they couldn't get the field position. They couldn't get error. No one got an error from anyone. It just didn't look likely. I think in the end, Cherry Evans had one go at field goal right before the end, this halftime of extra time. And then, yeah, there wasn't much else. Like, they just weren't even really in range to kind of kick the field goals.
No, it was coming off their own line and, getting into the middle of the park and kicking the distance type of thing.
Yeah, and every time, like, there was one point there where the Warriors, like, kind of restricted Manly for three tackles, and then they let them make a 15, 20-minute run, and then all of a sudden they were back in position again and they kicked it to the corner. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not a massive fan of Golden Point. I think it's a bit stupid. And that game really, to me, proved why it's not exciting. It's just dumb. Because it's just trying to set up field goals.
Yeah, look, it just, all it does is extend the last 5 minutes of any game. You get a bit of a shootout, right? People trying to kick the field goal if it's a draw. So that's how it happens in the last 5 minutes of any game. And all the golden point does is it just extends that by another 5 minutes or so until someone kicks one.
Yeah.
And I've never liked it. I do not see what's wrong with a draw. I think that if you get to that point after 80 minutes, a draw's fine. Have a point each and that's it.
Yep.
You should only need golden points. You should only count in finals football. I've been saying it since before they brought it in. I've never changed my mind. I've never liked it. I'm just a bit old school. And if the draw was good for 80 or 90 years, then I didn't see any reason to stop it.
And I don't think golden point either. I think it should be, if it's finals and it's drawn, it should be extra 5 minutes each way or 10 minutes each way, wherever it is.
Yeah, and, fine.
And then if you don't score at that point, then you go to golden point. Like, if you have to have a winner. Yeah. Because you've given both teams a chance to score and they haven't done it. Or, you know, wherever it is. And look, the other solution is, because everyone talks about golden try, which I think is dumb. Because then, that then removes, well, first of all, it removes people from being able to take field goals. It also removes the penalty from as being any kind of deterrent. So, you know, players will just lay all over them and whatever they're going to try and stop them scoring. So I kind of, my preferred one would be, it's not instantly golden point. If you score anything other than a try, the game continues until someone scores a try or until someone amasses the same points as a try. So if you get two penalties and kick two penalty goals, you win. Or if you kick four field goals, you win. Or if any kind of combination. But if you've kicked a field goal and the other team gets it back and scores a try, they win. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's the only way that I think golden point works. But even then, that's too convoluted. And then I suppose if no one gets to that 4 points, it's whoever's in front at the end. So if it's like, if it's say 12-all or 22-all at this game and someone kicks a field goal and then someone else kicks a field goal back and that's kicked field goal again, then the team that kicked the two field goals will win if they don't score the try. You know what I mean? Like, that still makes sense to me. But it's too convoluted. I'd just rather have a draw. I think draws are perfectly fine.
Have a draw or have, you know, you don't need extra time during regular season. Just have extra time in finals and be done with it.
Yeah. We're not like the American football, like the NFL, where they count everything by wins and losses. And even then, they can still have a draw. But they're desperate for results.
But Americans have always been desperate for results. It's a very much an American thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's whether or not your mindset is more European, which a draw is fine, or whether it's an American mindset. And I think the NRL just went down the American path. And, you know, fair enough. But I don't like it. Anyway, but that's...
Well, it's such an American thing. Like, I remember, and this is way out of left field here. But I don't know if you ever saw, there used to be a show, I think they probably still show on SBS at some points, that Japanese game show called Iron Chef. You know, they used to bring on the chefs to do the thing. Yeah. And so in the Japanese version, it was just like, they had a panel and the panel would just be like, yeah, we think this guy wins. There was no justification and a scoring system. It was just like, there was a winner and a loser. And they made the show for America. And when they put it to America, they actually started putting rules in, like everyone has to cook at least four dishes and they're all counted as this much percentage. And it became so, like, it was very Americanized, like everything had to be worked out so it was fair. So they made sure it was fair. Whereas in the Japanese one, they basically just went, oh, we think that guy's the best. And that's it. And then they don't care.
Yep.
You didn't win a prize. You know what I mean? It was just like, yep, you won the glory. Yep. Whereas the Americans are all paying for prizes. It's like, come on, guys. It's just it's a completely different mindset. We should do 3-2-1.
Yeah, I'd say last week we could not pick this game. We both, neither of us wanted to say who we thought was going to win.
Yeah.
The outcome just kind of justified our...
Yeah, yeah. I tried it on with the 52%, but it didn't work out for me because I think you're going to give me half a point, aren't you?
You get a point.
I get a point. How do I get a point for losing?
Because it's 2 points for a win.
Oh, okay.
Zero for a loss, one for a draw.
Okay, that's fair enough. I'm counting it as one for a win, one for a, like what no things for a loss. So it's like half a point basically.
Yeah, so it's actually 2 points on the league table if you look at the league ladder.
Yeah, I'm probably coming second last, and that's very annoying now because He keeps getting them wrong. He's like, sucked it, I got Souths. He's a Souths fan and he picked his own team.
yeah, Nick's beating you on that one.
Yes, he definitely is. It's a race to the bottom. Okay, so for the Warriors against the Seagulls, it's 3 for John Johnson, 2 for CNK, and 1 for AFB. I loved it when, I can't remember who it was that wrote it, but he just wrote SJ, CNK, AFB. And he could have continued it with the other two. So for Manly, it was Daly Cherry-Evans, Jake Trbojevic, and Taniela Paseka. Yeah, like I said, I only saw some of this game, and I think it's telling that the two halfbacks are the ones who got 3 points. So, look, I'm going to have to go back and watch this because I'm going to have to go see what exactly what happened in that game.
Yeah, look, Charnes was amazing. Barnett was good. Martin, Fanua Blake, DWZ. I had a bunch of the Warriors players, but Johnson I had as my 3 points. DC had as my 3 points as well. They were both fantastic. Yeah. Jake, I had Jake down as my two. And Ola Kawadu, 11 tackle breaks. He monstered people. It was unbelievable. And then Jake with 98% tackle efficiency and about a million tackles. So 49 tackles you made, 98% efficiency.
It's pretty good.
And I want to give a mention to Fox, who said that Manly have got a new player called Sif Topley. So that was nice.
Sif Topley.
Sif Topley, and he was trying to say it, and he was going Sif Topley, and he just didn't. And I killed myself laughing. So Sif Topley, maybe that's his new name.
Sif
he was pretty good. Tommy, Sipley and Paseka. I mentioned as
been good. The Manly forwards have been good this year. I just hope that they. When they eventually play Parramatta again, they're not so good because they'll probably completely destroy us. But yeah, they've been very good. The turning points, Terry gave me about 4 turning points. So he said the K-Paul penalty in the 43rd minute that led to the Burbo try, SJ's missed sitter, the Burbo injury, and then the Oshe Ole brain snap. I love how his name is Oshe Ole now.
Ben Trbojevic going off really messed up the balance of that Manly team because they were, you know, having to chuck, was it Lawton or someone else out there?
Yeah.
Or Waddell.
Waddell. And usually Waddell comes
out. Waddell went out there and they were unbalanced after that and it gave the Warriors opportunities to get them down the sides and it was funny. I was watching the game and Fox were complaining that the referee had let a knock on by Capewell by Talau go.
Yeah.
For Manly. The obvious knock on by Talau. But they just sort of missed that Capewell had knocked it on in the play before. Mm. And the ref just played advantage to Manly because Manly had the ball anyway. So they just played on. They didn't call either of them. They said, oh, whatever. Go on with it. This is quite funny. The TV was blowing up, and I was like, "No, the referee was kind of like, just let it go."
Yeah, sometimes the commentary gets a little bit. I don't know. I think there's a few Warriors fans there, and less Manly fans on that in the commentary. Okay, cool. The next one is the game I was actually at. So it was Parramatta against the Cowboys. 3 points to Clint Gutherson, 2 points to Sean Lane. 1 point to Dylan Brown, and for the Warriors, it was 3 to Tolungi, 2 to Scott Drinkwater, and 1 to Valentine Holmes. Yeah, I think that's pretty good. I think that's pretty right on. I don't know whether... I mean, Sean Lane's second half was really good, and his first half was a little bit not the
best. That's why. It was his second half, and he was very, very good in the second half.
Yes.
Whereas it was okay. He was just sort of solid, plodding along and not doing. But then he really lifted in that second half, and he was made a big difference to Para.
I noticed it very early, and look, this is getting into the weeds of Parramatta. So, last week when they played against the Raiders, and they had Blaze Talangi doing on the same side as what Moses would normally on. And Dylan Brown stayed on his same side on the left. This week, or this game, they swapped it. So seven jersey stayed on the same side the seven jersey normally goes on. So Dylan Brown was playing right instead of left, and they put Dejan Arce on the left. So, but they also had Dylan Brown swapping over every so often. And as against last week and even and the week before, all of a sudden the Parramatta attack kind of felt more fluid and it felt like it worked. And I think that maybe first half, there's a few guys that I'm in a WhatsApp with a few Parramatta fans. I'm obviously in the Discord one with the Eels fans that are on the Discord. There's about 1,000 Eels fans at Discord. And obviously there's some guys on Twitter as well. And they were all sort of rubbishing Sean Lane in that first half. Oh, he looks like he's not involved and stuff like that. And I think what the problem was is because it was that combination of having Arzy, who doesn't really play first grade very often, basically hasn't played at all this year, and Sean Lane together, and it wasn't working. And then it just kind of clicked in the second half. So I'm glad it did because they really needed it.
I think a lot of that was Arzy had a terrible first half himself.
Yeah.
So he was not good in the first half, but he really lifted his game in the second half. So there's something between those two. Mm. They worked it out amongst themselves in that second half.
Yeah, definitely. I think Clint Gutherson was brilliant. He had a really, really good game. I think there's a couple others that were quite good as well. I think everyone had a reasonable game for Parramatta. I'm happy enough with Tuolagi and Drinkwater and Holmes. I don't know if the order is right. I'm not sure. And yeah, I mean, I think all three of those were pretty good. I couldn't really think of anyone else for the Cowboys who was that good. Their forwards weren't really kind of dominating or anything like that. Tamalolo had a pretty decent game, but
Tamalolo did, but it all came late.
Yeah.
Nanai was equally good and bad in Dearden, the same thing. Like he did, you know, good things and bad things. Felt errors. Holmes was pretty good. He did really well. Chester was kind of a bit solid, but you know, wasn't there a lot. Cotter was probably their best middle.
Yeah.
Again. And I did want to give a rap to Harper, who just had the absolute worst time in that first sort of 30 minutes.
Mm.
And it just looked like he was going to be just absolutely torn apart all game. And then all of a sudden he just sort of got it together and he did something good. And once he did something that was actually positive, he just looked like he got some confidence about him, had put a smile on his face, and he just started playing well.
Yeah.
And he ended up with more good things than errors, which is not really a massive...
Yeah. Well, he started the game with... was it an error in the first time he touched the ball and then another...
Yeah,
I think two errors in a row.
Two or three errors with his first three touches.
Yeah, it was really bad. And I was like, because I haven't said it at all before now, but I was just like, surely someone else is going to be better than that. I mean, I watched the Eels reserve grade team play like an hour before that, and there is no one better than that. But he was just, I thought as we talk about the typical traffic cone is better, I thought the traffic cone might do better than him. But yeah, I must admit, he did play a lot better in the second. Like after that first little bit, he kind of got a bit of confidence and he was quite good. So, And I was very concerned because I was worried about the Cowboys just going right the whole time and just finding him. But yeah, they didn't. They actually ended up going left a lot. Like left to where they got the.
Was it Russell with Harper? It was Russell with Harper, wasn't it?
It was Simonson.
Simonson. Yeah, okay.
And that's when they had it was a bit of a struggle because Simonson went out for an injury and they had to put someone out there. This time at least they didn't put Kelma Tuolagi with him. What they did is they moved Penasini from the centre on one side, and then what they did is they changed it across to the other side when he came back on. Yeah, so and that was a big that was one of the big points when Simonson went off and Harper kind of got like by himself. But yeah, with Penasini there it was a bit better. Defensively, because obviously you know he can play out wide. It looked a little bit shaky on the other side, but they kind of held it together. But yeah, look at I saw the turning point you put there, and I think it probably was. I feel like, and maybe it's just the Parramatta fan in me, but I felt like Parramatta kind of controlled the whole game pretty well, and really probably should have been in front by a lot more.
I had about 75 turning points written down when I finally got to that last one. I had the Simonson injury with 22 to go, a Harper with knock-ons, and Lussick scores but being offside with 25 to go, and Felt knocking on, and Bearden 14 to go after Chester stopped by a Gutho try saver. So it was the Gutherson absolutely saved the Eels in that point and stopped Chester
from going through. There were some really big points in this game.
The Eels couldn't score a field goal, and then with five to go, and then Granville knocks on, and
they did not know how to set up for a field goal. It was really bad. Well, they were up by 12 with about 11 to go, and
did you watch the Granville knock on? Though he wasn't even looking.
Yeah, and they threw it to him. And he just dropped it.
Threw the ball at him. It just sort of bounced off him.
He's like, oh shit. Yeah, that was bad. That was very, very bad. But the one that I found fun. So. This game had a lot of turning pointy things. A lot of things. Look, I'm not going to rest fault or anything, but there was a lot of points, and I think it might have been points for both sides where they were a bit like, "How did we not get this one go our way?" Which, obviously, you wouldn't have seen in the coverage, but at the end of the game, I was, as it all kind of filing out, Scott Drinkwater and Clint Gutherson were standing there talking to each other, and both of them were doing the same arm movements where they were pointing to somewhere on the field and putting their hands up, going, "I don't know what happened there." And then it would be like Drinkwater would point to somewhere else in the field and be say something, and then throw his hands up in the air, and then Gutherson would do it again and be like this, as if they were both like all the calls went against us, and I don't know if they were jokingly doing it with each other because they didn't seem upset, but it was just so funny because it was like both fullbacks, both kind of, you know, like senior players in the team, both thought they got dudded by the ref on many occasions. So there's a lot of weird things that happened in that game. A lot of no tries that were very close, you know, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it could have been any turning point could have really been chosen, really.
Super entertaining to watch, super hard to score as a judge. I think that was my summation of the game. It was just, there were so many crazy things happening. But brilliant. Absolutely wonderful.
No, it's good. Well, I'm just glad that... Well, for me, I'm glad that the result went the way I wanted it to go, because that could have been really awful Saturday night if it hadn't.
Life's always better when you win, David.
Talking about a team that didn't have the best of Saturday nights, I think this is a Saturday night game. If it's not, then I'm doing the wrong segue. But the Rabbitohs, I feel like they had -5 people on their bench at some points in this game. It was not great. And look, I feel like all the injuries and the fact they didn't get blown out is the only reason why Demetrio is still coaching them. Although Nick, our now mutual friend, who's a Rabbitohs fan, said that he thinks that the reason they didn't sack him is because the next two games they're playing are maybe some of the tougher opposition, and putting a rookie coach or putting a interim coach in at that point is probably not going to help. So might as well let him finish out the next two, get embarrassed really badly, and then they can sack him.
Well, if he took over this week, he'd get 2 points from the bye.
True, but the next two are, I think, Melbourne and Penrith or something. I think are the next two after that.
You don't want those as your baptism of fire, do you?
Yeah, you don't really want your interim coach doing that. So, you know, maybe give him a couple more weeks and see what he can do against really tough opposition. And if he can get a result out of him, then maybe he'll keep his job. But, yeah, I think it might be a bit tough. But yeah, look, at this one, like I said, it felt like it saved them a little bit because, like I said, there was, I think a lot of points, there was only one person left on the bench. And, you know, they struggled, they fought their best. I don't know whether Cronulla were really on or not, but, you know, they didn't really put them away. So
the Souths were only down by 6 with 2 minutes to go, or less than 2 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. So... The Rabbitohs really fought hard. Burgess, with that hit on Williams, I don't know if you saw that, he knocked him into next week. And then Burgess got a try. He did try. And Dean Hawkins is, from the highlights I saw, his short game improved a lot.
Yeah.
Short kicks, grubbers, short passes, getting players in the right position. He seemed to sort of, I don't know, grow into himself a little bit. But I don't know. I think Kitangi did Keon Palmatangi hit somebody high. I'm not sure if he if he's on report for that. But the head knocks to Jai Gray and Murray won't hurt them next week because they've got a bye. So that's
true. It's very lucky for them. But yeah. So talking about the 3-2-1, so they gave Tom Burgess the 3, Dean Hawkins got the 2, and Shaq Mitchell got the 1. I think the thing about Dean Hawkins is the short kicking game was really good. The problem that Souths have got is that there's no one with a long kicking game. They don't have anyone. Cody Walker doesn't really kick the ball long that well. And Ilias before Hawkins, both of them not really long kickers of the ball. So not that I'm trying to help them. Well, not that I'm trying to help them or anything, but I feel like maybe they should get Latrell to kick it long. I feel like he's the kind of guy who could kick the ball down the field. You know what I mean? It would make a lot of sense to, you know, you throw it to Latrell. I think he just kind of, you know, slightly move his foot and it'll go 100 metres. So he does kick it pretty hard. So, you know what I mean? I can imagine he could probably take care of that for them and then just let the other ones do the short kicks for him. And that would make more sense. If I was a coach, that's what I'd be trying to do with South.
Can Whiten kick distance
Whiten
as well?
Whiten was kicking for Canberra, so there's no reason why he couldn't do it too. You know, he's not the best. Is it? Whiten's the kind of guy who looks like he always looks kind of gangly when he does things. He doesn't quite look like he's doing it right, but it comes off okay. So as long as he kicks it all right, it doesn't really matter.
Yes.
Girls
out to around 10, so yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, Whiten, maybe they're going to play Whiten. Well, so the problem is Whiten can only kick it on one side unless he goes running across the other side to make long kicks. He could do it, but you really need someone who's either your halves or your fullback to do it. Unless they move Whiten to fullback and just let him kick the ball when he needs to. The 3-2-1s for the Sharks was Brayley, Mulitalo and McInnes. So, yeah, I think Brayley was really good. Mulitalo was, pretty good. And McInnes, I mean, you can give McInnes a point every time. He tries his hardest, that guy. I think that was fine.
Mulitalo, do you have 2 tries, 2 try assists, 5 tackle breaks, 2 offloads, line break? I mean, he was just accumulating every stat. He was just playing rugby league stat monopoly, wasn't he? Just trying to accumulate everything.
Yeah.
But he was fantastic. Iro, I think, is a better centre than Talakai.
Yeah.
I think he probably gives him a bit more speed. Talakai is good coming off the bench for them.
Yeah.
Which gives him a bit more muscle in the middle. And I think that helps McInnes, who sometimes some of their forwards can tire, like Hazelton tired a bit.
Yeah.
But they did have, what's his name coming off the bench? Toby.
Oh, yeah. Toby Rudolph came back. That's right.
He came off the bench and he threw a beautiful pass, which set McInnes off straight down off the field. And then that set up one of the Sharks tries, which was just, fantastic stuff to watch.
Yep. Fair enough. So John Mundelism, as he is on Twitter, his turning point, he actually said it was really hard to choose one because like South just kept coming back. So he just said, well, the Sharks late tries, the only thing he could choose. Like you said, they were still in it right till the end, even if they weren't really in it because they didn't really have any players, but they were still in it right to the end.
They were gassed. They weren't going to go 80 meters because the Sharks were camped on their line, but yeah. I think that he was right. The late try just killed him off.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, okay, so the next one, I'll have to issue a public apology for reading the wrong thing. So I scored the wrong game, and then I had to ask someone else to score the other game. So and the reason why I did the wrong game is because Kev was supposed to do this week's West Tigers against Dragons, but he said he couldn't do it. And so I swapped him to next week so then he would take the same West Tigers game. And that means he wouldn't miss a West Tigers game and we could swap it over. But the problem was that I read it wrong and I accidentally went, okay, I'm going to take the game that I have to take is this one, which is the West Tigers and the Dragons. Luckily, I watched it, got my points in quickly enough because that meant that the other person was like, hey, I thought I was doing that game. And then I sent them across to do the other one. But I'm really glad I watched it, actually. It was a very interesting game. The West Tigers, the bubble kind of burst a couple of weeks ago, and it hasn't, they haven't blown it back up yet. I gave the 3 to Appy only because I felt like he tried the whole time. I know he wasn't the greatest, but at least he tried.
He kept making errors, but there was absolute effort.
Yeah.
So,
and there wasn't,
I kind of understand.
Yeah,
there wasn't, I kind of understand what, like, no, I understand why you went with Appy. I wouldn't have given him the points because of the errors, but on effort alone, absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought Tupu was brilliant.
Yeah, I did too. But then he went missing for a long time too. And so I had him with points. And then when I looked at it, I was going to give him either 1 or 2. And then when it got down to the real crunch of it and they were trying to come back, he just wasn't there anymore. He did some good things earlier, but he just kind of went missing.
Early in the game where he was excellent, and then in the second half he just, whether Ollam was an issue with them, and then
And they also scored on his side a lot too. Like defensively, I was a bit worried because all the Lomax stuff was down his side. So I was a bit like, oh, his defense probably wasn't that great. He might have done some good attacking things, but you know, all the kicks went up and basically got out-jumped by Lomax every time. You can't do much about that, but he basically did. And I gave 2 to Boer, and I gave 1 to Stefano, which, I mean, I think the West Tigers were quite poor. They really weren't good. The Dragons, it was funny because, you know, you said to me in the DMs, or you kind of only agree with Lomax, who I gave 2 to, and didn't agree with the other ones. But I gave Little 3 because I felt like everything, he was in everything, and he was, a lot of their creativity was coming from him, coming out of dummy half. Then I gave Lomax the 2 because basically anyone who could jump like that and score that many, like score tries like he did, or set tries up like he did, needs to get some points. And then I thought Kyle Flanagan had a really good game. Ben Hunt was having a stinker. And I think that Flanagan was doing really well. Yeah. And I thought, I'm going to give him a point.
Yeah, look, I actually thought with the Dragons, I thought that the players that sort of impressed me was Sua.
Yeah, he was good.
And I don't want to give him a rap, but De Bellin was pretty good off the bench.
He was, yeah, that's true.
He was very strong. So, and Molo, Frank Molo.
Yeah, he started well, and then he wasn't there anymore again. He did the same thing as he did. Yeah.
He started well, and then he had a bit at the end as well where he was really good. But then, yeah, obviously he's off the field for so long with the interchanges.
Yeah.
But yeah, difficult one to score, but it's still an entertaining game to watch. They need to get Lockie Galvin back.
Yeah, and so he'll be back this week, which is good.
And that sort of, because Sullivan is just not getting it done, is he? They need someone out wide. That Fatape, he is just an error with everything.
Yeah, I think they solved a problem in centre by bringing Olam in, but the other centre is just as big a problem. And the funny thing about the West Tigers is they have so many outside backs sort of sitting around in their kind of, you know, top 30, wherever it is. But they're just not using them. When we get to the team list, we'll see they have actually made a change there. But I know there's a few of them around. I'm not even sure if any of them are still there or not. Like the amount of players that they kind of had going through their outside backs.
But they had Dwayhe and Toa are both on long-term injury, so Toa's not back to around 11, and Dwayhe is round 17.
Yeah, I can't believe he's still out, Dwayhe. Like, it's amazing. I don't think the guy's played in 2.5 years. It feels like he's not played forever.
More than a year. But I think he got injured, came back and got injured again. So
yeah, it's crazy. Well, I mean, when they finally get him back, it's going to be very interesting because, you know, he was kind of supposed to be the 5'8", but now if Galvin locks that down, I suppose he could play centre, and that makes perfect sense. But he's going to be worried after that long of injury if he's going to come back okay or not.
I want to wrap the ref for the Tigers-Dragons game. There was, I think it was Grant Atkins, And there's one point where Isaiah Papali'i was laying in the ruck, and the player goes to play it, and Papali'i jumps up, and he just walks over, and the referee just says to him, "We can't play rugby league if you're laying in the way." And that's what he said to him.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Although I think one of my favourite bits of the refereeing was when he didn't bother to basically symbian anyone when the whole thing with Lomax happened. So Lomax makes his little half, like he makes the 20-meter tap and then gets absolutely coat-hanged by, I think it was Clemmer. And then there's like a fracas. And look, that guy ran in from everywhere. And then who was it? Was it one of the St. George guys ran in and the Tigers guy just put him on his ass? Or was the other way around? It was one of the way around. I can't remember which way it was. But one of them came running in and it was hilarious because he came running in as if he was going to like take someone out, and then the player from the other team just turned around and pushed him, and he basically just fell on his butt, and then just looked at him and was like, "What are you doing?" The turning point I had was Caesar's. So Aiden Caesar put through a kick. He had a terrible game too. His kicking game was really bad in some points. It was great in other points, but this kick was just like a landed straight in Lomax's lap, basically inside the in goal. So he ran out to go do the 20, and then basically that was the same moment. He did the little step around, and there was the high tackle, and then I felt like the game kind of just petered out after that. They were all aggro and none willing to play football anymore. So so that's what I've got. The last one we've got on our list is the Raiders against the Titans, which turned out to be a much closer game than anyone thought it would be. There's a couple of those this round, but
madness in the capital. Absolute madness.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I love this game.
Yeah.
This was fantastic.
Yeah. So the 3-2-1, Fogarty with the 3, Tarpany with the 2, Young with the 1, and for the Titans it was Joliffe with the 3, Foran with the 2, and the 5-8, AJ Brimson with the 1.
I had Tarpany and Fogarty definitely the other way around, mm-hmm. for the Raiders.
Yeah.
So for the Titans, it was hard because Brimson was quiet for so long, and then he just did things at the end which dragged them back into the game. Yeah. Like he didn't touch a ball for like half an hour, and then all of a sudden he just got involved in that second half, and then just things started happening. And so I can understand why someone gave him points. Foran was excellent. So, yeah, definitely good stuff there. There was things going on like Kelly. He loved lots of errors, but involved in so much that was good for them. And Beau Fermor, he had a good game up front, and so did Joliffe. So, interesting for that Titans team. I don't know if anyone saw the stats, but at one time, first half, 10 minutes ago in the first half, tackled in opposition half was 43-6, and tackled in opposition 20 was 19-0. Mm. The Raiders, if you won a game on meters gained, or on possession, or on any other stat other than points scored, the Raiders win that game by about 1,000 points.
Yeah,
they absolutely dominated in everything other than try-saving tackles, which the Titans, I mean, most of my ticks in that game were for try-saving tackles.
Yeah.
And they just, the Titans were saving them over and over again. The Raiders just were failing to score, but eventually got away with the win. So it was a crazy, crazy. Campbell missing a conversion and Fogarty taking the penalty on the scoreboard. That was big, right? Mm-hmm. Campbell, couldn't convert, and then Fogarty takes penalty, and that's 4 points difference.
Yep. And that's probably, I'd say that might be the turning point. Like, obviously, the field goal wins the game. But, if they wouldn't have gone extra time without that. So, I think that's probably what we'd be saying the turning point would be.
Yeah, it's just those, you need a good goal kicker. So many teams win because they have a person that converts 4-6. Makes a massive difference.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, that's all the games from last week. So we should, let's have a look at the changes. I think that's probably the best way because I don't want to go through all the team lists. So first game, we've got the Roosters against the Storm. So Tedesco's back from the concussion, which means that Mane goes back to the centres and Sully goes back to the wing. Tupanua's out with a head knock. Egan Butcher is back in, and then Sam Walker is listed amongst the reserves, so he might come back. I mean, what's your thoughts on... Obviously, the Roosters played quite well. I mean, I don't know if they played that much better, but they had Connor Watson at 5'8", with Luke Keary, and they kind of worked a bit for them. So maybe your theory about not having Sam Walker and Luke Keary together is got some weight to it.
Yeah, Watson's an excellent defender. And when the things that made a difference for the Roosters last week was having Radley, Brandon Smith and Connor Watson all taking the ball from dummy half and running with it. And they made metres up the middle through that, through the, you know, the Newcastle and the Knights defence. They ran at them. And there was a running from dummy half by those three players, which really made the difference. And then having Connor Watson as a big body in the middle as a defensive, middle made a real difference to the way they not only that they defended, but that they attacked. They don't have Walker's ability just to create something out of nothing. But if you can get your forwards running up through the middle and keep get that roll on, and if you can get your, you know, you've got three dummy halves, and then you've got Docker Clay comes off the bench, doesn't really need, you know, didn't really need him to do much. So Terrell May and White both coming on and just getting big meters off of Brandon Smith, off of Radley, off of Watson, just running it and then letting Keary do the kicking game and the sort of short passing game and the short kicking game when they get on the attack. And that made a big difference to how the Roosters' structure was. And I think with Tedesco at the back, Manu in the centres and Suoli on the wings, that might give them a little bit better balance in the outside backs as well. So, look, positive changes for the Roosters, but the Storm play bad, win games. So it's an absolute coin toss, isn't it?
Yeah. So for the Storm, Sofa Solomona is back in, but Kamikamitha is out. And then they've got Joe Chan back on the bench for Moaroa. Yeah, look, who knows? I feel like the Storm should win, but you know, the Roosters have been playing pretty well. So, look, I think this one might be very similar to what we talked about with the Warriors and the Seagulls last week. I wouldn't really want to tip either way. But yeah.
The Roosters are going to fall into that trap of trying to get it wide, because they'll look at Will Warbrick and they'll say, well, his defence isn't good. He doesn't, there's gaps out there. We're going to target. And they'll just keep trying to run it wide all the time. And it's not where they need to go. They need to go up through the middle, quick play the balls, then get them spread wide later. But they need to run it up the middle first. So if they keep trying to just target Warbrick, I think they'll just get themselves lost, and the Storm will beat them. So they need to make sure that they've got the right game plan going.
Yeah. Okay, so next one up, we've got the Dragons against the Warriors. So Jack Bird's out because of the head knock. So Lomax goes to the centres, and Tuipulotu comes in. Which I'd forgotten he even went to the Dragons, but he's there. And they midweek made a signing for Manu Brown, came back from Hull FC, and he's been listed amongst the reserves, so he might come in. The Warriors, they've got Adam Pompey's gone to 18th man, and Jez Tavanga's outcome of the hamstring injury. So not actual changes to the 17, but look at. I feel like the Warriors should win this quite easily, but just don't know. I think Manly were good, and that's everything. But the Warriors away from home, I think, if all seriousness, if they play decently, they should beat the Dragons by plenty. But I don't know what's going to happen with the Dragons. I don't want to tip anything with the Dragons, because they just, some weeks they're great, some weeks they're terrible.
Yeah, you look at the teams and you just go, well, the Warriors have got them covered all ends up in every single aspect of the match, and they're going to just run this one. And then you think, oh, it's in Wollongong. When was the Warriors' last win in Wollongong? Oh, you know, 1998. Okay, it was a million years ago when they last won down there, and they just got a horrible record. And the Dragons do really well at Wollongong. It's just at Wynn Stadium, they have an amazing record. And so you just go, I'm not going near this one with a 10-foot barge pole. I'm just not as far as the 52. I was going to put it on the Warriors this week.
Yeah.
That was going to be my pick, but then I just think, the Wollongong effect. So I don't know. I'm going to tip the Warriors, but it's just that nagging doubt of going down there to Wollongong. And Zach Lomax, interesting, he signed for Parramatta because he wants to play centre.
Yep.
And then they put him back in the centres. So you're lucky you got his signature before he got put back there.
Yeah, look, I don't know anything about, I don't know Zach personally or anything like that, obviously. I don't know what the discussions were, but I don't think it was all just about playing centre. I think it was also about he's been in a side that's been struggling and they continue to struggle. And I think he can see that, you know, with Parramatta, there's a chance to play, you know, to fill a gap in a competitive side. You know, like if he can go into that centre spot, all of a sudden that back line makes a lot of sense and there's a lot of strike and strike on both sides now. I mean, I'm not going to put Morgan Harper down, but he's definitely not a strike centre. And even when Sivo's playing decently, you put Bailey Simonson there, he's probably not a strike centre either. And I think that's... it kind of fills a good gap for Parramatta. It also means that, you know, he's in with a chance of a team who could make the finals, whereas I think the Dragons are maybe a year or two away from being decently competitive. So, you know, and he's gone through a few years of them being pretty trash. So I think he wants to get out because he wants to kind of put himself in the shot window a bit too. You know, he's not going to get picked to play for New South Wales playing for the Dragons. He might have a more chance playing for Parramatta. So, you know, ideally, I think probably some of the other teams would also give him that chance, but I don't think you can name a top four team that needs a centre like him who would pay that kind of money. So, I think he's gone for money. He's also gone for a bit of a chance. But look, if he ends up playing on the wing, I don't think it's going to be terrible for him. But I think he will get that centre spot at Parramatta. So it makes perfect sense for him to do.
Parramatta is the absolute best fit for him. All the reasons you said, I think Parramatta are the better balanced team out of the two, and it gives him a better opportunity, and I think that's absolutely it. So I don't think it is about the wing, because he's been lighting the wing up, but I think he just wants to be in a winning, have that finals experience. You don't get it very often, so yeah.
I don't think he'd complain if he was playing in a finals match on the wing at Parramatta. You know, I don't think he would complain at all. I think he'd be very happy to be doing that. But it's just a case of, I think it's the it's the old trope, but I think it's the team that gives him the most chance of success. Not that Absolutely. I think Parramatta's about to win a grand final or anything. I wish they would, but I don't think that's going to happen. But at least with Parramatta in the next couple of years, you can see that they have a strong side that is if they're not a final side, they're close to it.
Yes.
You know, so I think there's a big chance. Let's talk about Parramatta because they're the next game. So they've put Blaise Talangi on the bench and they've dropped Kelma Tuolangi. There's a lot of guys with names that sound very similar to each other. That's basically it. They mention in the NRL.com about Michael Sivo. He played absolutely terribly. He was so bad in New South Wales Cup. No one would have seen it because it wasn't a TV game. But he did score two tries, but realistically, both times it was... the only times he looked interested when they passed him the ball with the line wide open. That's any other time he didn't really do much. I think he had towards the end of the game, because that Parramatta team ended up winning that game, which was surprising. They beat North, who were coming second or third at the time, and Parramatta hadn't won a game. But he just looked uninterested. In fact, there was a young kid, I think maybe an 18, 19-year-old kid on the other wing for Parramatta who had a better game than Sivo did. So... I don't see him coming back anytime soon. He didn't take drop to being dropped the way that we hoped that he would as Parramatta fans. We hoped that he would rev him up, but I think he's just... I don't know what's going on with him. For the Dolphins, there's all kinds of issues because they've lost Tapio Fido, so they've brought in young fella Trey Fuller. Max Plath comes back, so Ray Stone's gone back to the interchange bench and Auckland Hubner drops out. And they put Sean O'Sullivan on the bench because of Anthony Morford being suspended. I don't know whether they're going to move that round at game time. I really think, hope they don't get it right because my team's playing them, but I really think this is the perfect opportunity for them to move Sean O'Sullivan to the starting spot and have Cody Nkorima off the bench, and that's probably their best halves sort of rotation that they could do, but they haven't done that. So let's hope they don't work it out before the end of the weekend.
Yeah, I think this was one where the Eels were my other pick for the 52%. I was tossing up between the Eels and the Rooster Storm game, and I still haven't quite nutted it out. I might go with the Eels as my pick for this week. But yeah, I can't see that Dolphins team. I don't think they've got the best lineup that they could have. I think you're right. O'Sullivan is probably the better bet with Nikorima coming off the bench when things get a bit looser later in the game. And I just think it's just a bit like they're missing key players. And when you think about Kafusi, Nikorima, Hammer, Lemuelu, Flegler, Farnworth, Gilbert, I mean, that's half their team.
Yeah.
Sitting in, you know, in the injuries or whatever. So they're just, yeah. I think if Parramatta should, they will, I think Parramatta should get this one by, you know, two or three tries easily, and it should just be a comfortable run. But you never know, because it's one of Wanya's teams, and his teams are all about effort. So,
And Parramatta, and they won't turn up.
They'll be complacent in this one, absolutely.
Yeah, they won't turn up, and they're going to get beaten. But that's fine. Let's move on to the next one. So Panthers against the West Tigers. So I think we said the last time when the Panthers lost, we'd hate to be the next team having to play them, and that's the West Tigers. So Cleary doesn't return yet, so Brad Schneider's still in there. But there are a couple of guys who've come back. You've got Scott Sorensen's back, and Matt Eisenhuth's back in the reserves. Luke Garner's back to the bench. And the West Tigers, they've got quite a lot of... Because they've got Galvin came back from suspension. They put Brent Naden in, so that's another one of those centres that could play there. So for Tarpey's out, I'm assuming he got dropped because I haven't seen anything about him actually being injured. Bateman's back from his concussion, so put Seyfarth back to the bench. Fainu and both the Fainus, Samiola and Latu, are both back in, so that drops Matamua and Simpkin out. I mean, I can't say anything other than Penrith absolutely destroying them, but a couple of years ago, the West Tigers came up against Penrith in a similar game. It was a wet game, and they completely outplayed them and beat them. So, you know, it's not without precedent, but
It was last year. It was this time last year, and it was at the same venue, Carrington Park in Bathurst.
Mm-hmm.
And I know because I was there, and I was incredibly soaked to the skin. I went out to Bathurst to watch the game with a mate who's a West Tigers fan and actually a Wests fan from years back from the Campbelltown area. And his parents live in Bathurst, so we stayed out there and went to the game. And we were so wet. We actually left before the end and went and watched the end of it in the pub because it was at least dry and there was beer. But it was, it was a fantastic win. And so the Tigers are undefeated in their last one game at Carrington Park. So I'm hoping that they continue with that wonderful dream run and win, but somehow I don't think they will, which will be disappointing.
Yeah,
but the crowd out there are all Panthers, so it's a very much a Panthers home game. The Bathurst crowd was very much a pro-Panthers crowd.
Yeah. They own one of the Leafs clubs out there, don't they? Don't they own like a
Bathurst Panthers territory. You saw a lot of jerseys, a lot of black and, you know, brown and stuff. So it was, a fantastic little football ground to watch at. Hard to get a view when it's packed, when you're packed in there, but good fun. If you ever get a chance to go out to one of those country games, get out there and do exactly that. It's wonderful.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to go to more grounds. I just can never find the time to do it, but maybe one day I'll go.
I am ticking off every ground in the country. That's one thing. They say Roosters fans don't travel, but I am going to every ground in the country. That's what I'm currently doing. Any ground that turns up in the game, I will go to.
I'm not doing too well with that. I think I'm at five. I think I've only got five grounds, and one of them is my team's own home ground. So I'm not doing very well at it, but I think I'm getting there. I'm certainly getting there, but it's taken me a long time.
Yeah, I went to Melbourne Amy and Wollongong last year. No, it was 2 years ago to Carrington Park. It was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the games I went to that year.
I thought and, so. Yeah, I thought it was that.
Yeah, you're right. Because I just realised by the ground count. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I haven't been to a... Have I been to a new one this year? I don't think so. But I've got to get out to... I haven't been to Bankwest yet. In Sydney, and I, how the hell have I not
have
got
to
ex- there?
But, I'll have to extend you an invite next time.
I will definitely try and... I'll have to get out there to... And I'm trying to see the roosters at all these grounds. I have been to Shark Park, but I watched the Cronulla versus the Panthers that round.
The Roosters play the Eels at some point at Bankwest this year. I'm sure they do. I'm sure I think it's later in the year, though. But
is it a Friday? I think I've got that one penciled down as a possible away, but it just depends how close it gets to Magic Round for me. So I do go
up
to Brisbane.
I can't remember
that.
Where it is. Magic Round's like round 11 or something, 10 or 11. So...
Yeah, I'm going up to Brisbane. I've already booked my everything for that. So
yeah, I don't understand Magic Round. I'm not bothered with it. But that's fine. Everyone else can enjoy themselves. We should keep going. So Titan Seagulls. So they've not named Jaden Campbell. Philip Sami is going to play fullback. Who I've not seen him play fullback before. So let's see how that goes out. Brimson's officially now in the sixth, and Fifita's going to start for the Seagulls. They've named Matt Lodge, so interesting. And they've got Ruben Garrick and Nathan Brown returning after missing last week. Saab is back for his first appearance, round one. And they've lost Ben Travojevic and Sipley. Or as we call him, Topley.
Sip Topley, yes.
Sip Topley.
Yeah.
Sip Topley does sound like a very proper English gentleman.
He does. Absolutely. He can go on holiday with Harley Smith Shields.
Very much so.
I can't see that. I'm looking on the injuries and suspensions and cannot see Campbell yet. He's not playing. So I don't know.
It says hasn't been named after suffering a knee injury in last week's loss to the Raiders. I don't know.
Yeah. Doesn't say how long he's out for.
Yeah, I don't know. No, it doesn't say. It just this one's just the NRL.com just telling you who's out and who's in sort of thing.
Yes.
But I don't know. It doesn't really say. Look, on the game, so the Titans away from home in Canberra, you know, got it to Golden Point. You know, at home against the Seagulls, I think they're going to be absolutely smashed. But the interesting thing is that the Seagulls, I suppose, Des Seagulls, could there be... something, maybe he's got a trick up his sleeve, maybe he can, I don't know, maybe he can rearrange the chairs or something, or he can break a door or something at Brookvale and they'll have to go fix it. I don't know, I'm not sure what can happen, but I feel like Des is going to have some trick up his sleeve to try and get them over the line. Obviously Kieran Foran playing against the Seagulls again, you know, do the two of them conspire and get over the line? Or I just don't see it though. I think the Seagulls are going to win very easily.
Well, with Jason Saab and Ruben Garrick coming back, that makes their back line look absolutely wonderful. I know the Titans have got a decent, some decent outside backs, and it's good to see Loughy come back last week. But I just think that Seagulls have got him covered in every area, so that's where I'll be putting my money. I can't take them this week, so I took the Raiders last week, so I can't take the Seagulls this week. That's who I would like to take.
Yeah, I agree. It's not much else you can really say for this one. Sorry, I'm just trying to pull up the next one because I was just trying to write points. So the next one up, we've got the Broncos against the Raiders. Adam Reynolds and Payne Haas still not out. Or still not back. So go with Jockman to get halfback. The Raiders... Zach Hosking, after coming back, is now out again, and they put Adam Mariotta back in, and that brings Simi Sasagi back to the bench. Chevy Stewart remains at fullback. Yeah, James Shearer still on the wing. The Raiders should have been a lot better than they were last week, and apparently they're quite good against the Broncos up in Brisbane. They give them a lot of trouble. I don't know. This one could be interesting, but I feel like the Broncos still should be good enough, but you know, without Adam Reynolds, without Payne Haas, they're not quite the same as they have been. And obviously the Dolphins didn't really give them a big, they didn't really give them too much of a challenge last week, but I think the Raiders will do a lot better. Yeah, what's your thoughts on this one?
Well, the Broncos will be welcoming back Payne Haas, Brendan Piakura, and Adam Reynolds in round 8, so they're definitely looking forward to those coming back. I don't know if it's me getting older or what, but these outside backs for all these teams seem to be getting faster. The older I get, the faster and faster they seem to get. That Chevy Stewart, electric. Schiller, fantastic. Tumaco, amazing. Seb Chris, powerful. Savage, all over, you know, electric. So the Raiders have got speed to burn out wide. And then you just look at the other side. So maybe they can get at Corey Oates a bit. But then the Broncos have got Staggs and Cobbo and Arthurs and Mam. So they've got speed to burn everywhere as well. And they've got the power in them. Patrick Harrigan and Willison off the bench, who's unbelievable. I think the bench could be a benefit to the Broncos. It's Saulo, the number 17, off for the Raiders, who is impresses me every single week. He is fantastic. But the Broncos have got Smoothie and Saylor, who can give them lots of options to do different things, and then Hetherington and Willison, who give them some power and strength in the middle to sort of tighten them up a bit. And how Carrigan plays is amazing minutes every week. So it's such a hard game to pick this one. There's options everywhere, but I think the Broncos have just been getting it done.
Yeah.
And they've been covering and they've been firing for each other and they've been fighting. And Jensen, and you know, is playing hard in the middle early in games. And a lot of that seems to be working for them. So I'm going to go with the Broncos at home. But there is an absolute path to victory for the Raiders. And it's not just a path covered in garden gnomes and unicorns. It's an actual, genuine path to victory. And I think that if they do win, it will not be as big an upset as some people would think.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, let's keep moving. So the next one is the Bulldogs against the Knights. Obviously, the Bulldogs have been quite good recently without getting every result they wanted. Obviously, they got one 2 weeks ago. They really should have got one last week against the Knights, who, like I said, they've not been performing that well. Although, away from home, they've been a little bit better than they were at home. So could be very interesting to see. So Connor Tracy goes back to fullback. And then that's obviously for Blake Taff, who was out in round 5, I think it was. Curtis Moran's back from suspension. And Turpin's out after being named at lock last week, or starting at lock last week. And Kotoga is out again, or is out from last week as well. And the Knights are exactly the same lineup. So, yeah, look, I feel like the Knights should be quite strong, but if the Bulldogs remember to go left enough, they could be a big trouble for the Knights. And I actually think the Bulldogs are... I've actually tipped them, like, against the Knights. I think that they should be too good for them. I know this is a bit weird because, you know, Newcastle is generally considered a better side, but I'm not seeing enough from Newcastle at the moment. I'm not seeing any desire from them. They got a little bit better when they brought Jackson Hastings in. I thought they were a bit poor in the couple of games where they went with Cogger and what's his name? The other guy. Oh, Gamble. Cogger and Gamble. But yeah, like with Jackson Hastings in it, I think they've just been a little bit better.
I think Cogger has suited Jack Hastings slightly better as a combination, and Brayley is playing some good minutes in the dummy half, and they've got some good forwards like Thompson and Pierce Poole and Saifidi off the bench. So there's stuff in that the Knights can look at, and once if Kalyn Ponga stays injury free and he links up on their left side, they are absolutely deadly down the left. And then the Dogs with Kikau and Crichton and Burton, and they're absolutely deadly down the left as well. So it's two teams that, you know, the traffic's going to go, it could easily be both teams running a left side attack all game, and which would be interesting to see which one cracks first. Connor Tracy at fullback, has he played there much before?
I know he played a lot of centre. I think
he played centre. Yeah, centre and reserve grade at Cronulla.
Yeah, but I think he did play a bit of fullback, like low, like not for a while though. But he does look like he would play fullback to me. I don't know why that's a weird thing to say, but he looks like a fullback.
Yeah,
I think he has. The played
Dogs
there
have
a
been
bit.
Playing. The Dogs have been playing quite well in patches without actually getting the wins, and I think the same can be said of the Knights in some. Like, both these teams, this is going to be an absolutely, a really, really close, like a really engaging, engrossing contest. So, it'll be interesting to see which left side wins. But I've kind of liked your Bulldogs pick. I think if they can make, if Hutch doesn't get gassed after 10 minutes and he can sort of, keep it together a bit longer, then... They got that. Hayward was good off the bench last week, and if Blake Taff can maybe come on, and I don't know if the plan is to have him come on as a 9 or have him come on as a 7 and replace Hutch. I don't know, but it's a fascinating matchup, this one, and I think I might just tip the Dogs, but I'm not going to back any with any confidence.
Yeah, I think the Dogs have been growing into the form, and I think they'll get better during the year.
You did say the Knights were bad at home and good away from home, maybe.
That's just my thoughts. I know the Knights lost their first game at home. They just lost at home again, and I think they lost another one between. I know that, and they lost the first round against Canberra. I should pull up there.
Maybe I'm going to stick with them, yeah.
I
tie myself in knots thinking about this one, I'll tell you.
Let me just confirm what I'm saying. So they lost at home to the Raiders, then they narrowly lost away, then they won a very close one against the Storm at home. They lost away. They won. No, I'm completely wrong. They have lost a couple at home. They haven't won a game away yet, but that's fine.
Let's go with the Dogs then.
I feel like the Dogs is the winner. Is definitely the one to go for. I don't know why. I thought they'd won a couple away. Anyway, let's move on to the last one. So this one should be interesting because they're going to play at the Prison. The Sharks, Katoa is out for a suspension. So we get another debutant. We get Sam Stonestreet. Hamilioli comes back on the bench for his game of the season. And yeah, that's it for them. The Cowboys, Sammy Valame comes back in for Murray Tuilagi. And that's it, basically. That's the only change they've got. I think the Cowboys
Katoa's a big loss.
He is.
Have you done about Stone Street? Have you seen him?
No, but they're all talking about how good he is, so we'll see what happens.
Okay. Sammy Valame on the wing
I can't believe they weren't picking Sammy Valame. I can't believe that... Okay, so first of all, they went with Caulfield. Okay. And then Valame, who can play centres, they've gone Laybutt over him. And then they've gone Tom Chester over him. And now finally, when Tuilagi is out, they've gone for Valame. So, look, I think he's a very good player. And I'm not sure why it's taken them so long to put him in there. But maybe he'll take that as a, encouragement. He'll have a great game. So... I don't know what to do with this one because the Cowboys were not bad last week. They were actually quite good. The Sharks were good enough to beat a team that was, didn't have a lot going for them. But it is in Cronulla. So this one you could flip a coin. I really don't know what's going to happen in this game.
I think that the big difference for this game is going to be the bench. If you look at the Sharks, they've got Williams and Rudolph, Talakai and Hamlin, ULE coming off the bench versus Granville, Neem, McIntyre and Gazewski. Griffin Neem does add something and McIntyre has his moments, but they just lack... It's not as strong a bench as the Sharks have got. Yep. And then... the likes of McInnes who can stay on, him and Cotter, that's pretty even. I just think that the Sharks at home, they're very rarely bested down there in Cronulla.
My only thought where the maybe the Cowboys have it is that front row. So McLean, Tabaloa, and Robson against Hazelton, Kafusi, and Brayley.
They don't like New South Wales. They don't like playing down here. I'm just going to go with the Sharks because I'm involved.
Isn't Jordan McLean from New South Wales?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, we play for Melbourne. But yeah, he's from New South. But as a team, they don't seem to like. They don't fare well in our fair state. So I think that I'm going to give it to the Sky Blues. Nice to see a Sky Blue team win over a Queensland team.
Yes. Yeah, well, look, I don't care about Origin, I'm sure it's fine.
I know I'm English, but I care deeply about Origin.
Yeah, I don't know why. I really don't know why. For me, it's just an exhibition game that got out of control. But, you know.
No, I absolutely love it. And, supporting New South Wales and loving New South Wales as much as I do, it's hard.
But, I'm sure when it gets to Origin season, we can talk about it more, but I don't really see it as it's not as important as, to me, international games are much more important than State of Origin is. But State of Origin has somehow taken over. But look, that's my own soapbox. We can get to it when we get to Origin, which will be in a few weeks from now. I think we might be done. That's the last game. We can't really do anything else. So we might sign off and let everyone get back to what they're doing, and hopefully all the games turn out to be great games like we had last weekend.
It was a fantastic round of rugby league. And,
it's really good. Yeah, it's very high quality.
Get out there and get yourself to a game if you can.
Definitely. All right. Well, thanks, guys, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, David. Bye.